Welcome to Local Talk, the program that explores the people, the stories, and the events of Central Iowa. I'm your host this week, Greta Anderson. The voices of the Ames Children's Choir. In the second half of the show, we speak with Jean Levasseur, the choir's artistic director, to learn about the organization's philosophy, achievements, and upcoming auditions. In the meantime, woe to all of us who must shuffle off to work in these days after Christmas. It doesn't have to be this way. The Brits and their erstwhile subjects have a much more sensible approach. Having exhausted themselves with Christmas festivities, they take the next day off. Our December programs at KHOI have taken a tour of the season's holidays. Given a strong British influence on our production staff, the phenomenon known as Boxing Day simply could not be ignored. I talked to my colleagues Kay Puttock and Deborah Bunka about their memories of Boxing Day and what it all means. Then Kay invited the owner of Ames British Foods just to hop in a skip from the station to tell about the bells and whistles of the British Christmas dinner and the sumptuous spread of pickles to be enjoyed the day thereafter. This is Greta Anderson from Local Talk on KHOI. The topic of this segment is Boxing Day, which is celebrated in Britain and the British Commonwealth on December 26th, the day after Christmas. With me today in the studio are two members of the KHOI reporting staff, Kay Puttock and Deborah Bunka. Kay is from Britain. What part of Britain?
Well, from London, and most of my relatives that are still around live in Kent. It's the southern part of England, London and Kent.
Great. And Deb is from Canada. What part?
Originally from Saskatchewan, but I've lived pretty much across Canada as I moved along following my husband doing his degrees in research and moved to Iowa from Montreal 15 years ago.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in and agreeing to be in the hot seat of the studio. How did you celebrate Boxing Day in your respective homes?
Well, I've just been talking to Marcus of British Foods about this, but basically it's a day that I really missed when I came to America. I felt I had to have a party on Boxing Day because always in England's 2 days holiday of Christmas. And of course, originally it used to be 12 days of Christmas. But it was a day that we ate cold turkey, lots of pickles, and in our house we always had Christmas cake, too.
Is that like fruit cake?
Yeah, rich fruit cake. It was usually frosted with like a snow scene and snowman. I love fruit cake. I know people make rude remarks about fruit cake, okay. But I love it. And in fact, our wedding cakes are fruit cakes, too, with white frosting.
That mine was as well.
Yes. Really?
Yep, white frosting, that's mm-hmm. right. And don't forget the alcohol.
So you celebrate with special foods. Deborah?
In Canada, Boxing Day it's hockey because two major hockey tournaments start around that time. So a lot of watching hockey on TV. We also have Boxing Day sales. It's like Black Friday here in the States. So if you want to go out and shop in that day, return stuff, you can do that. But for my own family, when I moved here, I really missed having Boxing Day like Kay. So what we did when we moved to the States, or a little bit before actually, because we moved here from Montreal, and Quebec is the only province in Canada in which they do not recognize Boxing Day. They don't follow the British tradition. That is anathema. So we started our own tradition there of Christmas Day would be the day to open the presents and just assemble things and play games with the kids. And our kids were little then, so it was a fantastic day of just, you know, relaxation and fun. And then Boxing Day would be the day that the kids could do whatever they liked, but the adults prepared the Christmas meal and we had guests. And of course, we kept that up when we moved to the States. Mm-hmm. It was kind of nice because people who celebrated Christmas here on the 25th could still come over for dinner, for Christmas dinner at our house, mm-hmm. which we enjoyed.
So I have to ask about the name Boxing Day. Do you put on gloves and duke it out over your present? Or is it of some obscure reference to the Boxers' Rebellion? Or what is this day? Do you put the gifts back in the box and give them to servants? I've heard so many different things.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the first time I remember hearing the term Christmas box, I must have been younger than 9 because we moved out of that house by the time I was 9. And there was a ring at the doorbell, and I came downstairs, and there was a man. He looked like a man to me. He was probably an older adolescent. And he said, "Have you got a Christmas box for the paper boy?" And I ran upstairs, and my father was absolutely prepared for this. He came down and obviously gave the paper boy a tip. And that's the first time I'd heard that term, and I became aware then that everyone knew what Christmas box meant. It meant, you know, a tip or a gift for your service people, people that delivered your papers. We had coal fires, delivered the coal.
So he asked for a box.
He asked for a box.
But he got a tip.
He got a tip in an envelope. There's two theories about it. Opening the poor box for the poor on Boxing Day, which actually the 26th of December is what used to be called, and I guess still is called in Catholic countries, the Feast of Stephen, St. Stephen's Day. Like the carol, you know, Good King Wenceslas looked out on the Feast of Stephen. And then in that carol, they take food and fuel to the poor man that they see.
Yes.
So this is a traditional day for giving food and fuel and whatever to the poor. And then in great houses, the servants would have the day off on Boxing Day. And they'd often be given a feast by their employers. So both those stories, and they're probably both, you know, both the origin of the term.
It has nothing to do with the Boxers' Rebellion?
Nothing.
No. Nor boxing.
People make jokes, though. You know, we'll have to box one another when we wake up in bed in the morning and this kind of stuff, you know.
Double entendre?
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's a nice day after the hustle and bustle of Christmas if you celebrate it regularly and you've spent all Christmas Day cooking and, you know, as the women tend to do, and working yourself really hard. Then the next day you put the leftovers out and it's just a really nice, relaxing family day.
Christmas is like the 2 days, Christmas and Boxing Day. And then, of course, if it comes at a weekend, like if Boxing Day was on a Sunday, this happened at least once that I remember, you'd have Christmas Day, Christmas Sunday, and then Boxing Day would be the Monday. You had to have that extra holiday, which was Boxing Day.
Yeah, I remember a lot of skating on the outdoor rink on Boxing Day. We'd all go out to the skating oval and just spend a couple of hours skating and then come back for a meal. And that was always really nice. I have really good memories. We'd just continue the Christmas feast, more or less. I just remember lots of nuts and those hard candies. They just come and they all stick together.
Oh, humbugs?
Yes.
Humbugs.
Yeah, I liked those when I was a kid. Those were like Christmas.
Big thing was tea time on Boxing Day. On Christmas Day, it had such a big, it was usually lunch in our house, mm-hmm. you know, late lunch. Round about what we called tea time, you know, was still full. You weren't ready to eat. But on Boxing Day, you'd had cold turkey and pickles for lunch, so you were ready for some Christmas cake, as my dad used to say, lashings of hot tea.
Lashings.
Lashings of hot tea, which meant gallons of hot tea at tea time. And little sandwiches and, yeah. You know.
Little sort of squares of fruitcake, I remember. Uh-huh. Fruitcake's very big. I mean, my mom used to spend so much time making fruitcake around the holidays. You can't imagine. Yeah. It was a huge production.
Yeah, and then, of course, Christmas pudding or plum pudding, that's like a hot fruitcake, really. Do you eat that in Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you light yours on fire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of like a midway between a pudding and a...
Well, you know, it's the big scene in A Christmas Carol, you know, when they eat that giant goose, then they bring in the pudding, iron water pudding, and it's in flames.
Yeah. Hmm.
All ye wealth or rank possessing, all of you who bless the poor shall yourselves find blessing. That's how it's something like that.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes, it is beautiful.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even, brightly shone.
You are listening to KHOI's Local Talk. The topic of this half hour is the British holiday of Boxing Day, which takes place on the day of St. Stephen, directly after Christmas. Here's Kay Puddock's conversation with Marcus Johnson, owner of Ames British Foods, on the topic.
I'm here with Marcus Johnson, owner of Ames British Foods. Welcome, Marcus. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, Kay. It's a pleasure to be here.
What we're particularly interested in today is Boxing Day foods and things like Christmas crackers, if you'd like to talk about those and how those go in Ames.
Well, I always love talking about food, as you know. It's one of my favourite subjects.
Okay, and how about Christmas crackers? How can we explain Christmas crackers to people that don't know what they are?
Not edible at all. that always catches people out. It's quite hilarious. We have a huge selection of crackers in the store, and I had someone in just the other day that was actually paying for them before he realized that they were not edible.
Explain what crackers are. They're things that you use almost like table decorations that you put by the place setting on the table.
Yep.
And they're called crackers because two people, each person grabs one and then you pull them and hopefully if things go right, there's a cracking sound because there's a little tiny bit of gunpowder.
There's actually some gunpowder in there, yep.
And then all various treats fall out when the cracker bursts.
Yeah, quite right.
And what always falls out is, however cheap the crackers are, there's always a paper hat, or as we call it, it's like a little paper crown. Everyone wears them without embarrassment.
Yep.
Everyone wears their paper hat. There's always usually a riddle and a paper hat, at least.
Yeah, there's a joke, and no matter how much you pay for the crackers, the joke is always terrible, just appalling. But that comes in every cracker. The paper hat is in all crackers. They never fit me. They always split. And a gift, some sort of trinket. Now, there's crackers that are specifically designed for kids, and they have little kids' toys in. Mm-hmm. And then there's family ones that have a mixture. And then there's the higher-end ones. And we have some of our more expensive ones. This will probably sound odd, but they have things like metal nail clippers and combs and magnifying glasses. Do have some really unique ones this year. We have two varieties of musical crackers. One box of crackers that contain mini handbells, and you can actually create a handbell choir around the Christmas dinner table. Then there's a slight variant in that which consists of whistles instead of bells, so you can create a little whistle choir at the Christmas dinner table.
Okay, what I particularly wanted to talk to you about today, though, is Boxing Day, because that's something
Boxing
else
Day.
That Americans don't know about.
No.
And I wondered if when you first came here and you first realized you were going to be here for a few Christmases, whether you missed Boxing Day.
To us, Boxing Day was just another day to kind of relax after the hustle and bustle of Christmas. And I really miss it as well. It seems that having to go back to work on the day after Christmas seems too soon.
Yeah. You know, now, did you eat special foods in your house on Boxing Day?
We ate leftover turkey.
Right.
Yes.
And, of course, accompanied by all sorts of pickles, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, one of our more unique products in the store is something called Branston Pickle. And it's basically a chunky chopped-up vegetables, including rutabaga and some other things, in a brown, tangy sauce. And it just so happens it goes really well with cold turkey.
Yeah, it's sort of crunchy.
It's kind of crunchy, and tangy. And it goes really well in the turkey sandwich. So I always push it at Thanksgiving, actually, because that's when Americans eat a lot of turkey. I push the Branston, hey, you need to get some of this for that leftover turkey that you're going to have. I think generally when people try it over here, they really like it.
It's very good.
It's very good. And it's one of those few things that there's absolutely no equivalent over here. You know, so a lot of our foods, there are sort of equivalents. But there's nothing like Branston Pickle.
No, there isn't.
No, and it's one of my favorite things, actually. If I didn't have the food store, it's the one thing I would buy somewhere else online or whatever.
Now, I'm not sure if you have them in the store, but something we used to have a lot in my family was mustard pickles. You don't see those here either.
No, we didn't have those.
You didn't have those. No. And you had Bubble and Squeak.
Bubble and Squeak, of course. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Maybe we should explain what Bubble and Squeak is.
Okay, yeah. Bubble and Squeak is what one does with the leftover vegetables. And so
potatoes.
And potatoes, yes, of course, potatoes. Those are basically just fried in a skillet, kind of like a mashed potato, or you can make them into patties as well, and just eaten as a side. I happen to be a little bit of a heathen and really like tomato ketchup with my Bubble and Squeak, which used to drive my mum crazy, but it just goes really well with Bubble and Squeak. So
now, pickled onions is something we always had with the turkey, and I had a lot of cousins, and most of them seemed to be boys, and most of them were older than me, because on Boxing Day they'd be tugging into these huge pickled onions with their cold turkey and saying, I love Boxing Day. And I'm sure it was a lot of it was those pickled onions.
Yeah.
Which you have different sizes and different strengths, I believe.
There's extra strong pickled onions. The main difference between our pickled onions and the ones that are available over here is they're pickled in more of a malt vinegar, so they're darker, and they're bigger onions. You can get the silver skin onions, the little silver skin onions over here that are just pickled in white vinegar. But what I think people really like, what I really love, is the larger.
Right, that's something I really miss too, actually, is pickled onions. I love those.
Well, you should mention the other pickled things we were talking about earlier, because those are so
unique. Oh, pickled walnuts.
Unique.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I noticed these, and I read a lot of old recipes, and I was excited because I'd never actually seen pickled walnuts before. Mm-hmm. But I'd read about them in old recipes, and so I was excited to see them. And you have them in your store?
We have them in the store, yeah. And most people are just very intrigued by them. They don't buy them. They're extremely expensive, actually. But people are very intrigued by them. I think it's a rather unusual concept.
As I say, all these old recipes, and I'm going to try something called Wow Wow sauce, which is apparently an old traditional sauce to go with Bubble and Squeak, and it has pickled walnuts in it. Yeah, I mean, that's what you say when you eat it.
Wow.
Apparently, because it's pretty hot and it's got mustard and English strong mustard and a lot of Worcestershire sauce and pickled walnuts. Did you have in your family or, you know, amongst your neighbours where you lived, special activities you did on Boxing Day?
We weren't big into sports, so what we would do is go for hikes. And a lot of British people do that, especially on Christmas Day after lunch or Boxing Day, especially if the weather's nice, you'd go for a hike.
Right.
And you know, it's remarkable. When last time I was home, actually, I noticed there's so many people out hiking, you know, which you just don't see over here.
That's true. And in fact, my sister's village, they have a Boxing Day hike, like the village.
Oh, really?
The whole village gets together.
Yeah.
And they go on a hike that's sort of pre-planned, and they usually go back to someone's house, or if there's a big group in several people's houses, or to the pub for snacks afterwards.
Right.
After the hike.
Yeah.
So that would be sort of around about tea time, and they finish the hike.
Yeah, it's a big cultural thing.
Yeah, they are.
And of course, everyone has dogs. The British are great dog lovers, and so you'll see all these families out with their dogs.
Yeah, and most pubs, you can take your dog into the pub, or in fact, even into hotels and things like that. If people take their dogs everywhere, the dogs tend to be well behaved, socialized.
Yeah, I think so.
They just lie down under your chair and don't bother you. And is there anything we haven't talked about or I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about, or any final shot you'd like to say about British foods or Boxing Day?
We do enjoy eating to excess on those days. And then, and of course, the British enjoy a libation or two. And really, Boxing Day is a day to do both those things and to take it easy. And to watch an old black and white movie on the TV in the afternoon. And
always an old movie, yeah.
That's actually one thing I just had forgotten about, actually. The Wizard of Oz. Is it Christmas Day or Boxing Day?
That's interesting. It's a very American thing.
It's a very American film, but it's absolutely ingrained in British tradition now to show that movie on... It's either Christmas Day or Boxing Day. I don't remember. So I told my wife this, and she thought that was the most bizarre thing in the world, and she almost didn't believe me.
Thank you so much, and have a good Boxing Day.
Thank you, Kate.
You are listening to KHOY's Local Talk. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. We're going to change gears now and speak with the artistic director of the choir whose voices you have just heard. I'm here with Jean Levasseur, artistic director of the Ames Children's Choir. Hi, Jean.
Good afternoon.
Jean, I noticed right off the bat that Ames Children's Choirs, it's plural. Tell me about the different choirs that you have.
Well, we have three choirs within the organization. One is called the Prep Choir, and they're the youngest of our singers, probably starting at age 7 or 8. The next choir, that's a little bit older children, upper elementary, are called chorale. And then the third choir in the organization is called concert choir.
And where and how often do these choirs meet to practice?
They all meet once a week. The prep children and chorale meet for 1 hour on Monday evenings, And the Collegiate United Methodist Church Annex Building is gracious enough to host us. We rehearse right there. And the concert choir rehearses also once a week on Monday nights, but they're for 2 hours.
Must the participants live within the city limits of Ames, or do you welcome others?
Absolutely not. You know, the name of our organization is a little bit misleading that way. It's called the Ames Children's Choirs. But we have children from all over central Iowa that will drive in for our rehearsals. And so we have kids right now from Madrid and from Boone. And we have children in the past who have driven in from even greater distances than that. I think we also have a couple of kids that sing with us from Huxley right now. So,
well, that's great. So if you are in our listening range, you are welcome to come to the Ames Children's Choirs and try out. There are tryouts coming up soon, aren't there?
There are. We do mid-season placement auditions, and that will happen on January 3rd. That's a Thursday evening, and Saturday, January 5th. And that is for all of the choirs. Typically, it's only the younger choirs that we will audition in the mid-season, but this year we've kind of made a change in policy that we're opening up auditions to all three choirs.
Audition is a little scary as a word. What would you say to parents or kids who might want to join the children's choir but feel a little scared about auditioning?
Some kids have a lot of experience and don't get nervous at all, and they come right in and they're just prepared with a song and they're ready to do anything that we throw at them. And other kids have never auditioned for anything and are very, very nervous as they come in. And both Misty is the director of the Prep and Chorale Singers, have a lot of experience in the classroom. Both of us are ex-teachers, and we've seen all levels of kids come in. And so when they walk through the door and we've established a little bit of a conversation, we know exactly where to start at the very beginning for those kids. And we can make it as easy as possible for them. So it could just be a matter of us singing a note and asking them to repeat it. It could be a matter of them actually having a prepared solo and just coming in and just wowing us with a range of things that they can do and everything in between. So the audition process will typically match the student's ability.
I noticed that the children performed in Ames in early December. Is Ames their main audience, or do they travel, and do they compete?
Well, we are not a competing organization. You know, in the Midwest here, we have something called show choir, and they go out and they have competitions on a weekly basis. We are a non-competitive organization, and yet we do perform in Ames, but we also perform worldwide. We have a history of
worldwide.
Yes, we've performed internationally. This organization has been represented in many different countries as well as the United States, all over the United States.
I have to ask, going abroad is rather expensive. How do you finance that?
The nuts and bolts of our organization, the kids pay a tuition fee that just covers expenses for our organization, then the rental of property sometimes and just basic fees that we have, music, things like that. The tours that we take are all self-funded by the kids. It's much like a school trip. They have to do their own fundraising or come up with that cost on their own. And so those are separate. A lot of times we get a lot of benefactors that will give us donations to help fund our organization. Those funds go strictly to keeping those tuitions down, offering scholarships to students who just can't pay a tuition yet love to sing. So yeah, those tours, those trips, they're all just paid for directly by those families.
But it sounds like that should not be an inhibiting factor. If somebody wants to join the choir, there will be a way for their kid to go.
Absolutely. We make ways for them to go.
And that sounds like a really exciting educational opportunity for someone.
It is very exciting. I mean, that's a highlight for a lot of their experiences. But it grows a lot deeper than that. When you ask the kids, what was the most special thing from the last year, it's typically not all that wonderful trip that we did to D.C. last year or the time we were in Czechoslovakia. But it's getting to know so-and-so, getting to make this new friend that I have and those lasting relationships that we have within the group. Just in the last summer, we took a nice trip to Washington, D.C. Ames Children's Choir performed there for the National Memorial Day concert held at the Kennedy Center with the United States Army Orchestra under the direction of Dr. Craig Jessup, who's a retired Air Force colonel and lived in Omaha for a long time while I was actually teaching there. And I had built a relationship with him singing in a jazz ensemble. So it was really wonderful to be involved in this production and to catch up with Dr. Jessup as well.
What song did you sing there?
We sang a lot of typical patriotic pieces, Battle Hymn of the Republic. We did all of the military military songs. Every branch was represented in a huge medley that we did. But we also did some unusual pieces of music, something that Frank Sinatra had recorded back in the 1950s. Frank did this piece called If You Believe, and it was with a group of Harmony band members. He typically didn't do things out on tour like Bob Hope did, but he had just recently done a movie and was a colonel or pilot or something to that effect. And so then right after that movie was produced, he did go on a pretty long tour. A lot of this music that we sing from the military are written by the musicians in the military. So he kind of stepped out of his comfort zone and did a wonderful plethora of music during that time.
And one of them was If You Believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are going to listen to a song that is much more familiar to all of us. Some of us have struggled mightily with this tune.
Well, this is an arrangement of the Star Spangled Banner. Dr. Sylvia Munson, the founder and artistic director for the first 15 years of the organization, did lots of arranging for this group. And this arrangement is a wonderful arrangement for treble voices. So many times it's sung just as a soloist, or you might hear a full range of harmonies thrown in there with male voices singing bass notes. Well, this arrangement works really, really well for treble voices and covers all of the harmonies that need to be covered in that. We have prepared this and sung this song as an organization for many athletic events in the community. We've also been invited to sing this song for a Minnesota Twins game that they're going to have this summer. It's just to help bring awareness to our organization with a crowd of people that may not attend vocal music concerts.
Here's the Ames Children's Choir singing the Star Spangled Banner. Ames Children's Choir singing the Star Spangled Banner. I'm talking with the choir's artistic director, Jean Levasseur. Jean, that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. They are wonderful singers. And I must say, one of the things that was just wonderful about preparing that this fall when we were rehearsing is studying the actual poetry. I just sat and thought of a wonderful conversation that we had about, "Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave?" And them just asking, "I don't get it. Why say, oh, say?" We looked at a couple of letters from the time period that were written, and we looked at the language and really studied the style of writing, the style of speaking in that day, and how much it has changed since then. So there's wonderful opportunities in every piece of music, but that was kind of an unexpected one that we had, as I didn't really prepare a lesson regarding that. I was just basically teaching the notes and rhythms and trying to get us to be perfectly together, and to get into that conversation just shows that they're really thinking through these pieces. They're not just singing. They're really learning.
That's wonderful. That sounded just so professional, such high quality, and you mentioned your role as a teacher. I've been thinking that for somebody in your position, you're faced with two tasks in a way, producing the finest performances you can on the one hand, and then on the other hand, nurturing the child as an artist, as a developing person. What is your approach to the discipline required of young vocal artists?
What attracted me to the Ames Children's Choir program when I first had the opportunity to get into this position was their mission statement stated that they strive to be the very best in the choral tradition, but they also try to develop self-esteem and awareness and develop character and confidence with young people. And as a teacher for 24 years, that was my mission statement, basically on my heart. At all times, we're trying to promote excellence. And so there is a fine line where you're coaching. And I can say that, honestly, that I've watched Misty rehearse and myself rehearse. And our rehearsal styles, they're fashioned in a way where we really can push the practice very hard, the rehearsal time really hard at times. And other times, we just look for opportunities to laugh about something or look for an opportunity to say wow to something when there's a revelation that happens throughout the rehearsals. And that is the way life is. There's a wonderful song called All God's Children Got Troubles, and misery is optional. Trouble is going to come. You know, that's a definite thing in our lives, but misery is optional. And so we opt not to have misery in rehearsals and crack a hard whip and work them so hard that it's just brutal. We don't have that drill sergeant mentality in our organization. We really strive for making it fun and creating excellence through the fun.
Right. So in your job outside of Ames Children's Choirs, as a church music director at Bethesda, you have both experiences of working with adults and with children. What especially do you like about working with children?
Well, what I love about them a little bit more is that they wear their emotions a little more on their sleeve. The younger they are, the easier it is to know how they're feeling. And as I watch adults and children, and I do watch them, as a choral director, you think we just listen. But something that we've been repeating over and over and over again in my rehearsals is this phrase, if they like what they see, they will love what they hear. And in order for them to really look authentic, they really need to know what they're doing and not just the notes and the rhythms, but they need to know the character of the song. They need to know what the message is and then identify with that and express it at the same time.
How do you choose the songs for the Ames Children's Choirs?
Wow, that is the most important job I think that we have sometimes, is to pick the music that fits the singers. And it takes a couple of years to figure that out, what will work with that group to develop a relationship. So I worked hard on my first year finding music that was going to be very challenging, yet music that I was comfortable with and that I thought would be exciting. And quite frankly, about a third of that music was just not Ames Children's Choir material that was really fit the children. This year, by being my second year with the group, it's just been a massive improvement. Our holiday program and our fall programs really came together much better just because I knew who they were, what they liked, and what they could do well. Our programs are very varied, and I mean that. We have folk music, we do multicultural music, we sing all of our concerts in several languages. We sang in Portuguese, we sang in Latin, we sang in Japanese, we've sung in Russian recently. There's just a lot of different styles of music. We do some current things, we'll do Broadway shows, but we'll also do ancient music, maybe some chants that we can't even find very good written scores for that we just try to interpret. And I think that's the responsibility of a music director, is to show the world music, not just here's what works in Ames, Iowa.
Being an academic center, perhaps there are children in the choir who might speak those languages that you sing?
They do, and we're very blessed with that. We have quite a plethora of multicultural students right now. And so when you look at our group, it truly is a melting pot. And Ames really is that way, isn't it? And as you look across the campuses of Ames, you see that in our city. And we really are a reflection of that multiculturalism.
About how many people are in the highest choir?
We've got 20 singers in the top group this year, And those singers are ranging from the ages of 12 to 15 to 16. Typically, they're mostly girls at that age, but we have quite a lot of boys that are hanging on to their treble voices in this ensemble, and they're just a wonderful addition to our group.
Can you give an example of a song that you chose that you felt that matched, that fit the group?
At our holiday program just recently, the one that really touched me just emotionally, musically, in all ways, just made the hairs on my neck stand up, was a piece called Lux Eterna, which means light eternal. And we looked at that, those two words, in many different realms. And, of course, it has a religious teaching as Christ being the light eternal when you look at the entire text. But we looked at the idea of eternal life. We looked at the idea of no matter what happens in our life, we can be a light. And it just has these soaring melodies that don't sound like anything popular today at all. And it was written by a good friend, Dr. Z. Randall Stroop, who directed the Nebraska Children's Chorus while in Omaha, Nebraska. He was the choral director at University of Nebraska, Omaha, while I was teaching in that city. And I got to teach his children. They attended the school I taught at, and my children were involved in his programming. And he really has a mind for children's voices. He has a heart for their voices and knows how to write melodies that sound extremely hard for adults to do, and they are. But for some reason, children's voices can just make them angelic. And so when I listened to that arrangement and I got to conduct it, I just felt like I was directing real angels. As I watched their faces while they performed it, their eyes were beaming with light just coming out of them as they sang it. They loved it.
Well, now we're going to have to listen to that one, too.
All right. It's also on the CD, yes.
Here's the Ames Children's Choir singing Lux Eterna.
Thank you.
That was Lux Eterne, performed by the Ames Children's Choir. We're talking with the choir's artistic director, Jean Levasseur. Jean, you said that your colleague, Z. Randall Stroop, arranged that song, and you mentioned that the choir's founder also arranged music. Do you write and arrange music as well?
I do. I am a writer, too, and I've written quite a few things for school children. And actually, for this Lux Eterna at our holiday program, I arranged a part for violinist and a string bass to join that and play that. So that was a wonderful thing to hear that come to fruition and be a part of the program. And those are wonderful moments when you just put something on a page and then you hear it in your head, but then when you hear it actually live and being done and it pleases your ear, it's a neat feeling. It's very satisfying.
So tell us what's coming up for the choir in the spring.
Well, we're doing a lot of collaboration since I've arrived. We've collaborated with the Suzuki String Program. We've had a lot of children come and join us and play strings with our program, and they're going to continue to do that here in the spring semester. We're going to have 8 string players at our concert in the spring for the Midwest Children's Choir Festival. We've also collaborated with the Ames Chamber Artist, and we're going to do a concert here in February, February 23rd, of Hawaiian music. We've got a wonderful artist from Hawaii, Kim Siota, and she's going to come and sing some music, share some of her music with us, or we're going to try to sing some authentic Hawaiian music as well on that day. But then on April 26th, we have a wonderful collaboration, a biannual event that we call Midwest Children's Choir Festival. Dr. Weston Noble, the retired choral director from Luther College, he is a legend of choral music. He has agreed to come in and conduct a piece that we had written by Alan Kepke. Alan Kepke is a very well-known Iowa composer and conductor, taught music in Iowa for many, many years. He recently passed away. About a year ago, I commissioned him to write a piece called Dream It for this concert in April. And so his very last composition that he completed was this piece called Dream It. And Alan's piece will be conducted then by Dr. Weston Noble at this event. We'll have over 400 students from Iowa. It's going to be a huge event. It'll be at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. And we can't wait.
Jean brought in the music of this specially commissioned piece by Alan Kepke. And I saw it lying there and wanted to see how Kepke was spelled and thought maybe the listeners would be interested in looking him up as well. His name is spelled K-O-E-P-K-E. So that's Alan Kepke, and the piece is Dream It, and you are going to be performing that on April 26th at C.Y. Stevens.
Correct.
With a whole big group of kids.
Yeah, very big group.
I want to just get back to one thing that you said that sounded so important, that the children, despite all of the excitement of huge groups of kids and exciting music and exciting venues, that the real treasure is the friendships that they make in the choir. Have you observed that yourself?
Well, yes. A lot of these kids come in, they may be just a little bit different if they're really into music and if they're really focused in on just that art and developing that art. Sometimes that doesn't correlate to being popular in school. And coming together with other kids who just love music and have that same passion really brings them together. That gives them an in, something that they can communicate with, but then also develop relationships. So these kids are connected with each other very, very well through social media as well, but they also connect outside of these groups. They've developed ensembles outside of this group. I can think of 2-string quartets where many of those individuals were connected through their connection of either playing with Suzuki strings or through the Ames Children's Choirs. So there's other things that develop and that grow out of this organization. And we always say, and this is one of my other things that I'll say, if it ain't from the heart, it ain't art. And so we try to really feel what's happening in the music, but we also try to understand each other, know everybody's names very, very well, know everybody else's interests very well. So we really get to know each other. We have several retreats throughout the year where we get to do those kinds of fellowship things where we really spend time together playing, working. We've done lots of other activities besides sing.
Well, Ames Children's Choir sounds like a wonderful opportunity for children in our broader community who have a passion for music or think they might. Can you, again, tell us when the tryouts are for the spring practice sessions?
Absolutely. Those auditions are happening on January 3rd, that's a Thursday evening, and on Saturday, January 5th. And if you'll just call our number, 290-1422, or contact us on the web, and that's at theamschildrenschoir.org, you can get details on how to connect with that and get into the annex building of the Collegiate United Methodist Church, which is just south of the corner of Sheldon and Lincoln Way.
Okay, we will repeat that phone number at the end of the show, but if you want to get on the web, it's aimschildrenschoirs.org and set up for an audition time.
Yeah.
Jean, thank you so much for coming in. I've learned so much and heard some good music.
Thank you, Greta. I really appreciate the invitation and being able to have an opportunity to get the word out on a great radio station.
Been listening to KHOI's Local Talk, a program that explores the people, the stories, and the events of Central Iowa. Our guests were KHOI reporters Kay Puttock and Deborah Bunka, the owner of Ames British Foods, Marcus Johnson, and the artistic director of Ames Children's Choirs, Jean Levasseur. Ames British Foods is on the web at amesbritishfoods.com. Or visit the shop right across from KHOI's studio on Douglas Avenue between Main and Fifth. If you do, be sure to drop in and say hi to us as well. Information about upcoming auditions or the CDs recorded by the Ames Children's Choirs can be found on their website, ameschildrenschoirs.com, or by calling 290-1422. That's 290-1422. For the Ames Children's Choirs. The music you heard came from the choir's first CD, Dream a Dream, and included the songs How Merrily We Live, Younger Generation, The Star-Spangled Banner, and Luke's Eterni. We also played Good King Wenceslas by the Roaches from their holiday album, We Three Kings. Our theme music is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. I've been assisted with reporting by Kay Puttock and Deborah Bunka, and with engineering by Richard Morrison. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.